Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of the Left of Lansing podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and listen up. I just saw a Fox News poll, of all places, which has Joe Biden trailing Donald Trump 47-45% here in the state of Michigan. And actually, that's not a bad number for Joe. I've seen others that were worse. It's a good number for Joe Biden because, in the end, the Democratic Party apparatus and the get-out-to-vote efforts here in the state of Michigan, I think, are far superior than what's happening with the clown show that is the Michigan Republican Party. The Democrats own a big advantage here in the state. Not to mention a pretty popular Democratic governor, Gretchen Whitmer, at the helm as well. And after that New York congressional race in which Democrat Thomas Sozzi defeated the Trump-like Republican candidate to pick up the seat that was once held by disgraced Republican George Santos. And by the way, Sozzi won by a bigger margin than the polls suggested. I'd say that might bode well for Democrats throughout the country. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not a huge fan of this New York Democrat who just won because he ran like a Republican light candidate, and he will make many Democrats upset with some of his votes, I promise you. But he ran on the Republican Party's failure to pass an immigration bill, a bill that pretty much gave Republicans everything they've ever wanted on that issue, and Republicans sabotaged their own pet bill because Donald Trump didn't want Joe Biden getting the credit for such a bill, and he wanted to keep the issue on the forefront. Well, by keeping the issue on the forefront, Trump is once again reminding all Americans that Republicans across the country and here in Michigan are working just for him and not working for the people. And maybe that's a winning strategy. Same with gun safety. We just had another tragic mass shooting happened during the Super Bowl championship parade in Kansas City. The Super Bowl championship parade. I mean, despite 800 police on the scene, a mass shooting happened where a mother of two was killed and many children were shot. So far, it appears they will all make it, which is great news. And you know, it's strange that whenever I hear the right wing talk about crime and violence, they never want to mention how we have the most laxed federal gun safety laws in the industrialized world. I mean, this shooting happened on the six-year anniversary of the Parkland shooting and, as we just passed, the one-year anniversary of the MSU shooting. And after the MSU shooting, Michigan Democrats got to work after hearing the demands for Michiganders, many of them young voters who've had to deal with school lockdowns and shooting drills. They passed a number of gun safety measures. Now, these are measures I talked about last week with the University of Michigan's firearm gun violence prevention researcher, Dr. April Zioli. And please go back and listen to our talk last week if you missed it. Now, these laws include expanded background checks, safe storage laws, red flag laws, and an 8-year ban on anyone convicted of misdemeanor domestic abuse. Now, will these laws solve the gun violence epidemic that's happening in the country? No, but they can help save some lives. And if we're not going to either reinstate the assault weapons ban or hold gun manufacturers accountable like we did with cigarette companies, then this is at least a start. It's a start, and it's sensible. The current situation is nonsensical, and it is unsustainable. And Michigan Democrats did something to help people. But I'll say it once more. Where are the Republicans who keep talking about crime yet never want to do anything about the ease of criminals to get their hands on guns? Michigan Democrats at least tried to make some sensible, common sense steps to curb gun violence, steps that many other states are taking, like Florida, for example. Even Florida's taken the red flag law step. They at least went in that direction. So this is happening because progressive Democrats in the state are doing the people's work by working to help people. This week, those gun safety laws went into effect. The repeal of Right to Work for Less went into effect, giving more power back to unions who are fighting for working families. Michigan became the first state in 60 years to repeal that anti-worker law thanks to Democrats. Michigan reinstated its prevailing wage law, which was repealed by DeVos-backed Republicans years ago. And now this means that workers for state-funded construction projects will earn union-level pay for their work, again, thanks to Democrats, as they are working to help uplift the working class. This month, as I talked about last week, over 700,000 or so Michiganders will receive up to $750 thanks to the expansion of the earned income tax credit passed again by Democrats. And coming soon, Michigan will begin its expansion into the clean energy sector thanks to bills passed by Democrats last year, included in that Clean Energy and Jobs Act, reaching a 100% clean energy standard by 2040, energy efficiency programs, increasing the state's energy waste reduction standards, and trying to grow a clean energy sector by putting the Michigan Public Service Commission in control of large clean energy projects with a 100 megawatt capacity or larger. Legislative Democrats took this step because many of these big projects were being blocked by local governments throughout the state. And much of this happened due to disinformation, thanks to efforts by Lenawee County Commissioner Kevin Martis, who's been leading a disinformation charge to prevent these clean energy projects from happening in my state, in your state, in our state. And in doing so, many family farmers haven't been able to decide for themselves if they can partake in a wind turbine or solar farm. They can't make that decision, which will help earn the money from companies wanting to use their land for these projects. They can't make this decision, which will help them keep their farms rather than selling the land to some developers, which is ironic since opponents of wind turbines complain how they change the landscape. Oh, they're just so ugly. Yeah, right. I hear you. Coal-fired power plants are just so lovely compared to a wind farm. God. Yet these same people, they don't think about what could happen to that land once the family farmers have no choice but to sell. And they'll probably go to some developers or something. So the rural parts that they love so much will be gone. And as a quick aside, in my county, Gratiot County, many of you who drive through it while on 127 see all the wind turbine farms. This isn't just helping the farmers who allowed their land to be used for these turbines, but it's helping Gratiot County entirely thanks to an influx of tax money, which is helping refurbish roads and other infrastructure projects. Since 2012, around $87 million in tax revenue has been generated for Gratiot County. $87 million in tax revenue. That's real money helping people. So yes, it's helping families save their family farms, and it's helping everyone else living in the area. It's helping everyone. I'll say that again, living in the area. It astounds me that there are people in leadership positions in these counties across the state who don't want to improve the places in which they live. Astounding. Anyway, this Kevin Martis, the Lenawee County Commissioner, is joining forces with Big Oil and Gas and Koch-funded groups such as ALEC to block farmers from saving their farms, which then blocks the state of Michigan from creating a robust clean energy sector, which also then blocks our efforts to help save the environmental future of the state. And Mattis is now in charge of a so-called, and I'll accentuate the point, a so-called grassroots group, which calls itself Citizens for Local Choice, and they are now collecting signatures so that a repeal of this part of the Democrats' law can be on this November's ballot. This Citizens for Local Choice group is backed by some big money corporate donors in the fossil fuel industry, and they are hoping that their misinformation and their fear tactics will lead them to victory. Oh yeah, it will be a victory for fossil fuel, but it won't be a victory for the rest of us, including the environment and family farmers. Joining me to discuss this further in just a moment will be Montcalm County farmer Dick Farnsworth. He supports the part of the Democratic Party's bills that takes the power out of the hands of these misguided county commissioners who are hell-bent on keeping Michigan stuck in the past while hurting family farmers. And he set up a group called Patriots for Montcalm to fight back against these big muddied interests. And he's standing by to talk more about all this coming up right after the break. You are listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
And as you heard Jessica just say there, if you'd like to continue the conversation with me from this or from past episodes, just email me. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right. Now, this is a topic I've been wanting to cover here for quite some time, ever since Michigan Democrats passed that clean energy and jobs package last year, which requires energy companies to reach a 100% clean energy standard by 2040. It increases the state's energy waste reduction standards and makes utilities create a low-income energy waste reduction program. But there was another part of this bill package that especially caught my eye, and it was the part which gives the Michigan Public Service Commission, a state regulator, the authority to green light large clean energy projects like wind and solar. Now, this gives farmers control over what they want to do with their land when it comes to signing on to these projects. Now, this part passed because several local governments around the state have been blocking such projects from happening in their municipalities and towns, and thereby preventing Michigan from being more of a leader in clean and affordable energy. But now, a group calling itself Citizens for Local Choice is leading a petition to repeal that part of the law, which would put power back in local governments that want to keep blocking plans to push Michigan into the clean energy future. And they are collecting signatures as I speak to put the repeal of this law on the ballot this November. And this would have dire consequences, not just for the environment and for clean energy here in the state, but also for farmers in the state, for many of them that want to join in on these projects. Joining me to talk more about why this new law gives farmers a chance to keep their farmland and why those opposing this measure are hurting family farmers in the long run is Dick Farnsworth. He is a Montcalm County farmer and also chair of Patriots for Montcalm. Mr. Farnsworth, thanks a lot for joining me here on Left of Lansing this week. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Pat.
Well, before we dive into the details here, how long has your family been in farming?
Since 1880.
Oh, wow.
Came out here in 1880. Actually, my great-great-grandfather was working for C.C. Comstock, a lumber baron out of Grand Rapids. He was sent up to where the farm is now to run the mill as they cleaned up the tops after they cut all the virgin white pine that were used for rebuilding Chicago after the fire, and bought the property, I think, for 5 cents an acre. Bought 360 acres and started clearing stumps and farming probably around 1882. And then my great-grandfather and grandfather were dairy farmers up until my grandfather retired in the 60s. But my mother and father bought part of the property from his aunt, and it wasn't really farmable. It was kind of sand dunes, hilly. And they planted Christmas trees, and we started that in 52. I was about 5 years old at the time, and I was involved in that until I retired from Christmas tree farming in 2019.
Is this something, when you were a boy, did you know that this is what I'm going to be doing for my life?
Well, I'm actually an electrical engineer, so I did both.
All right. Yeah. What'd you do with your electrical engineering knowledge?
Well, I worked at Texas Instruments for 5 years and then Rapistan and Grand Rapids for another 8, and then started my own business in 1982, and I've been doing that since. I'm semi-retired, which means I work when I feel like it. My oldest daughter and her husband are running the company now and doing very well with it. So my wife and I come in and do what we can do to help and travel when we can't do anything else.
All right. That sounds pretty, pretty good. Well, okay. I may not know much about Christmas tree farming. So can I ask you, what did you and the family enjoy most about doing that kind of work?
Well, for me, it was being outdoors. It's a good stress relief. Because I spent weekends anywhere from Thursday through Monday, Friday through Sunday, depending on the time of year. But it's good physical outdoor labor. And as I said, the ground wasn't really farmable. And my dad tells a story of when he was a kid, that he used to have to drag a potato crate across a 600-foot row just to get one crate full. So they really didn't farm that part. So he decided to put the Christmas trees on it. We actually now have a grass problem, and we've got topsoil, and it's been good for the property. And yeah, we did a lot of good for the land and people that wanted Christmas trees.
Just going to ask this, and you know, again, if I sound a little ignorant when it comes to this stuff, because I am, I'll admit that. Did you notice any challenges, you know, with climate change when it comes to a Christmas tree farm, or compared to maybe what farmers who are, you know, growing other types of crops have to face each year?
Absolutely. When I was a kid, we used to get lots of snow and cold weather in the winter. But starting about 20 years ago, we started having less snow, shorter winters, warmer winters. And we really need the cold weather to kill off funguses in the ground, insects, just part of the natural cycle. And we were having lots of problems with, I had insect hatches in March and April. It used to be May, June. And they would get two or three more generations, which required spraying, which actually, by the time I got done farming, I wasn't spraying that much because I worked with Michigan State on some research stuff to use more natural predators for taking care of the insects. But just the climate, as it changes, has disrupted all of that. I mean, it was hard to tell what was going to happen when. The patterns all shifted, and it was very difficult to keep up with things.
So then a winter that we're experiencing here right now is definitely not helping either.
No, it would be bad.
So knowing that climate change is affecting farmers, not just obviously in Michigan, but throughout the country and the world, and the challenges of keeping up a family farm, I can see why some farmers would be open to allowing their land to be used for large green energy projects, not just because of climate change, but also what this could do for them financially. Why did you want your land to be part of such a like large energy project? And how would joining a clean energy project help you and other farmers in the long run?
Well, first of all, you know, we were approached by Apex for this wind project they were doing in Montcalm County or planning. And I had been following solar and wind as an electrical engineer for many years and kept wondering when somebody was going to do something. Well, they started this project. From our standpoint, I have four siblings and we own the property now, and we rent out the tillable cropland, but there's still, and I actually, when I retired, I rented out about 50, 60 acres to another Christmas tree farmer. So those are still in that property, still on Christmas trees. But return on the rental for the tillable land and the Christmas trees pretty much covers the taxes, but not all the maintenance of the buildings and the other property on the farm. And getting involved in one of these projects gives us enough extra income that we don't really have to scrape for dollars here and there. There's always the opportunity to build housing on some of this property that isn't tillable, but we really would like to keep it as a farm, keep it rural, which that was kind of our initial reaction when this opportunity came along to lease for the wind project, give us some extra cash to work with.
Then what happened since you said that you signed on to this project and that you were for it? What happened then in Montcalm County? Did the local governments there try to block it? Were they successful?
Yeah, well, what happened was, I think there's six townships involved in the project, and Sydney Township was the first one, and their board developed a restrictive wind and solar ordinance so that you couldn't build industrial wind or solar in that township. And the board voted 4-1 to accept that restrictive ordinance. There was one farmer on the board, and he was the one that voted against it. So they got what they wanted and got the restrictive ordinance, but they recalled him to send a message to the other townships that if you don't go along with these restrictive ordinances, we're going to recall you. And when they got done, I think there were 9 people recalled from the boards, all farmers. My biggest problem with the Sydney one was the farmer that got recalled was a Army Ranger veteran that had fought all over the world to protect our rights as free citizens in this country. And he was recalled for expressing his opinion. That's what got me involved and other people at the same time. That's how we formed the Political Action Committee, Patriots Vermont Com.
Talk about that here in just a second. I just wanted to follow up on what you were talking about. Were you surprised by the strength, I guess, or how organized the opposition would be throughout those townships in Montcalm?
Yes. Actually, we first heard about the resistance to this. We own a cottage on a lake near the farm, and we started getting emails from my group. I don't remember their actual name, but something about safety and health and something else. And it was obvious that they had gotten our email from our lake association, which is a different story. I don't know how they did that. Well, I guess I do know. But so we got onto a Zoom call that they invited everybody to, and it was Kevin Martis, who is a well-known anti-wind and solar leader, and he goes around the Midwest organizing these anti-wind and solar groups with some other people out of the state. Yeah, they were well organized. They knew what to do. They knew how to go about it, and what they were doing at that point was going to the other townships. The same people were moving from one township to the other. There was a few from each township, but there was a core group that went to each of the township meetings, and they would intimidate and harass and yell and scream and approach people in the parking lot, and it just made an absolute nuisance of themselves. In fact, Martis had put out a text about how you should treat politicians, because if you can make them scared of you, then they'll do what you want. And that's kind of their basic mantra.
So it's all about using fear.
Fear, absolutely. They were boycotting businesses. If I can think of one person on one of the boards that owned a very popular kind of orchard, cider mill and whatnot, and they were trying to get people to boycott him. And he'd been involved in township and community stuff for like 30 years, and they just absolutely destroyed him. The business continues okay, but it just really was bad.
So it sounds like there was a lot of outside influence that was stirring up all this fear and all of this anger and resentment. And
yeah, they had people come over from the Thumb, and I don't know where all they were, all outsiders. And there's, as I said, this Kevin Martis, he's from Riga Township down, no, it's not Washington, I don't remember the county.
Was that Lenawee?
Lenawee, that's it. Yep. But he's tied in with an attorney out of Ohio and some other people, and it's outside influence. And quite frankly, I suspect, and everybody suspects, there's fossil fuel money behind it somewhere, but you can't prove it.
We'll cover that here in just a few more details here. But before we do that, I was just wondering if you could talk about then if this is why you decided to form this group, which I believe is called Patriots for Montcalm. Is that correct?
Yeah.
If you don't mind, maybe you can talk a little bit more, describe what your group is all about, and have you been able to get people to join in the effort?
Yeah, we've got a fairly good sized group. Our initial mission was to help the folks that were getting recalled by doing flyers and promoting them. The problem is we were way behind the eight ball on this. The anti-group, as I said, came in well-organized. They knew what they were doing. They were way ahead of us, and we did the best we could, but we were not able. I think only one of the 9 or 10, I guess it was 10, one of them didn't get recalled, but we were unsuccessful. And that's why we formed. And now our mission right now is to hold the people accountable that took over for the recalled folks, because they, well, they weren't experienced to start with, and they have some interesting things they're doing. They're spending lots of money, and as one of the former treasurers said, they're spending money like they had wind turbines.
You brought up the name Kevin Martis, and I was going to bring him up as well, so thanks for doing that. And like you said, he's been going around because what, he's the spokesperson or of this group calling itself the Citizens for Local Choice? Is that kind of what he is?
Well, yeah, I call him kind of the cult leader.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he organizes it. He has his group. He has his people that, because he's been doing this around the Midwest, so he knows how to do it. In this case, they went to the lake associations because they used fear of property values dropping and your view and all this stuff, and that got them all fired up. They don't understand that their view is my property.
Right.
I don't think people really think about it. They're driving around the state of Michigan or any place, and they have this wonderful view. Somebody owns that view, the state or a private property owner. Under the law, private property owners have the right to do with their property within certain limits what they want. And in this case, should be perfectly fine for farmers to harvest the wind and the sun.
Precisely, precisely. Well, this group calling itself Citizens for Local Choice, as you said, it is run by this Kevin Martis from Lenawee County. And you and I, we talked about this in our emails leading up to the interview. I shared this article from Planet Detroit's Brian Ulnett, and he wrote a huge piece on the opposition, again, calling itself Citizens for Local Choice. And if you don't mind here, Mr. Farnsworth, I just would like to talk more about this article. I'm going to read just a couple paragraphs for those who may not have gotten to read it. And this is what Brian Ulnett had to say about Lenawee County Commissioner Kevin Martis, who is also head of this whole opposition group. And in that story, Ulnett wrote, "What Mattis has framed as a grassroots effort has received messaging help from the Marketing Resource Group, a public relations firm that has represented the Wolverine Pipeline Company for decades. Wolverine is jointly controlled by Mobil Pipeline Company, Sunoco Pipeline LP, and others." And Brian Ulnett continues, "Martis is a senior policy fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute, previously known as the American Tradition Institute, which has received backing from coal companies. One former fellow at ATI, a John Drodes Jr., worked with Koch-funded American Legislative Council, or otherwise known as ALEC, on a nationwide campaign to fight wind projects. And in 2012, Martis went to a national coordinating meeting for anti-wind activists and climate change deniers from fossil fuel industry-backed groups." I will post that story on leftoflansing.com. So, Dick, this Citizens for Local Choice, to me, isn't just some grassroots movement at all. I mean, you've already talked about other people involved in it, but it appears, just from reading this story, that it is backed by some powerful fossil fuel industry interests, not to mention ALEC, which is a Koch-funded campaign to have all 50 states pass similar pro-corporate, anti-worker, anti-environment legislation. I don't know what you can talk about on this whole thing, but I assume this isn't probably all that shocking to you when it comes in terms of who's backing this movement.
Oh, not at all. And now in Montcalm County, there is a Citizens United chapter, which I think we all know what that is.
Yep.
And they're involved in this. Some of the newly elected officials post everything, Facebook and whatnot, as Citizens United Montcalm. There's outside forces, and it's big money behind it. It's not a grassroots. I mean, the people who are doing it on the ground think they're grassroots, but they're being manipulated, and I don't think they understand that.
Right, and we're seeing this not just in Montcalm County, of course, throughout the entire state, and, of course, again, throughout the country, especially in states that are really pushing for more cleaner, greener energy. So what then made you decide to jump aboard and strongly support this part of the clean energy bill that Michigan Democrats passed last year, the part that switches power out of the hands of local governments and their ability to block any kind of clean energy efforts and put that power into the state regulator's hands to give the okay to large green energy projects. Why did you decide that your voice was needed? Because if I'm not mistaken, I think that you did testify in front of a Senate committee, a state Senate committee, in support of that part of the bill. So what made you decide to really back this kind of measure?
Because I, first of all, believe in green energy and climate change, as I've stated. And we have to do something, and we've got to do it pretty quick. I am somewhat concerned about where we are last year with the hottest year on record. And, you know, I follow this pretty closely, and it's we're in a point where we really have to make some serious decisions in a hurry if we're going to get to where we need to be. Because once we go over that threshold, I understand, is we're not going to cool the earth off. It's just going to keep going.
If we may even be past that threshold.
We may be. We don't know. That's the problem. Yeah. The scientists are constantly saying, well, that isn't what we expected. That's earlier than we expected it. You know, that's not good news when they say that.
Does it frustrate you when groups proclaiming to be about the family farm or protecting the family farm, like, for instance, the Michigan Farm Bureau, for example? I read that they oppose the state of Michigan from helping family farmers such as yourself and others out there who want to join in these efforts. And the Michigan Farm Bureau says, hey, this has got to stay in local control, local governments. They know what's best. And so they're all for local governments blocking these large clean energy projects. Does that frustrate you even more?
Yeah, well, especially since yesterday when I saw the Farm Bureau's news release that they are actually helping gather signatures, and we suspect they're giving money to this group, which I can tell you the farmers in Montcalm County that know about this are extremely upset right now. They have to pay their annual dues to this organization. And the mission statement, I think you can look it up, I'm just going to paraphrase it, is supporting farmers in alternative energy sources. Well, this is an alternative energy source, but they're not supporting farmers. We don't know why they've done this. We've been kind of fighting this problem for a year. We've had several farmers in Montcalm go to the Farm Bureau local meetings and protest and ask them why they're going against their own mission statement. And they've been co-opted by somebody. We're not sure what's going on there. But there are remedies that we are pursuing. We'll see. Farm Bureau may have opened a door that they didn't really want to go through. We'll see.
I did not know. Thanks for breaking that little bit of news there. I didn't know that Farm Bureau was joining in the signature efforts here.
Yeah, I got that last night. So we're just today starting to look at what we're going to have to do. The other problem I want to just point out is when they talk about the MPSC, you know, the media always says the three-member board appointed by the governor. Well, it's not. It's a three-member board that makes the final legal decision, but there are several hundred scientists, engineers, lawyers, people who know the business that they are in and the regulations that they set for these companies, pipeline, everybody. They know what they're doing, and they're there for a reason. They started in the 1880s with the railroad as the Railroad Commission. Yeah, I wish the media would quit referring to them as political hacks that just make these decisions on their own, because that's not the case at all.
Not. No, it is not. You know, it's astounding to me that the same people fighting against this are the same people who always proclaim that they're not only about saving family farms, but they care so much about property rights. I've always had to hear that through the years. I mean, I worked in farm radio about 20 years ago. I know that's a long time ago, but, you know, I got to hear that a lot. I've talked to politicians for my years in media who always proclaim that they're for property rights. But it doesn't seem like when it comes to this issue that they really seem to care about your property rights.
No, they do not. And again, not every farmer is going to sign up for solar and wind.
Right.
But there are farms where they've got land they can't farm, they can't make any money off of, they could put a solar project on, or they could put a wind turbine on it because it doesn't produce and it just sits there. They have to pay the taxes on it, but they don't get any income for it. And I don't think people understand that there's a lot of farmland like that.
One last question, since I've got you here, if you don't mind me asking, and you know, I brought it up already that I worked in farm radio a couple decades ago. And here's something I remember is that I was struck by how little support Democrats received from the agricultural community, especially by corporate farming interests. But I shouldn't just say that, though. I mean, there were family farmers who really did not like Democrats. However, I do remember talking with several farmers off the record who would tell me that they were Democrats or independent, you know, but they just weren't Republicans. But they never really would really shout that out loud. That didn't make sense, actually, to me, because I always felt like Democrats were trying to help find ways to save family farms as climate change was happening. In your opinion, what could Democrats or progressives such as myself do to help reach rural Michiganders in a better way and help them understand that, you know, we are on their sides? I mean, there are plenty of dirt road Democrats in the state, no doubt, but much more work has to be done. What's your opinion on all that?
Well, to give you a good example, going through all this, when I was over in Lansing for the hearing that got canceled with the Senate, the one before I actually testified at, there was a number of farmers from Oncom that day because it was raining and they couldn't be in the field. They were prepared to testify, but we couldn't. But we afterwards were headed downstairs, and one of the farmers says to me as we're walking down, you know, I don't think ever thought I would live to thank a Democrat for protecting my property rights.
Hmm.
And that has been a theme over the last 3 or 4 months with all these people, because the people in the PAC are, they're all Republicans, they're all conservative, but they have all seen this and going, wait a minute, the Republicans are fighting this and they're trying to take away my property rights. And here's the Democrats fighting for my property rights and giving me an opportunity to save my farm by getting extra income to get us through the tough times. My point is that the Democrats are doing the right thing. They just need to publicize what they're doing.
Agreed. Agreed. Something I talk about a lot here is messaging. So that is a great point to end our conversation here. I'll keep talking about this issue throughout the year. And if you've got time, maybe this fall, as we get closer to November, I'd like to highlight this issue again by having you back on for another episode, if that's okay.
Okay, sounds great.
All right, Dick Farnsworth, Montcalm County farmer and chair of Patriots for Montcalm. Thanks so much for being on here this week, and thanks for fighting for what's right.
Yep, thanks, Pat.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need to give Pat a piece of your mind, or do you have some stories you think Pat should cover? Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you have Michigan beer ideas for Pat, he'll love you even more. Now, here's Pat.
I'd like to thank Dick Farnsworth for being on and sharing his thoughts and insights on the right-wing Republican efforts to destroy Michigan's clean energy movement. But in doing so, they're also destroying Michigan's family farms. Mr. Farnsworth brought up a great point that it's their land. It's not the town's land. It's their land. If they want to be part of the clean energy movement, they want to be part of the clean energy solution and the money that it'll bring in so that they can keep their family farm while helping the state's environment and helping diversify the state's environmental and economic portfolio, they should have the right to do so. Again, the right wing, I have heard for many years, has always celebrated property rights. Where are you? No right-wing government bought off and bribed by big oil and gas should have the power to usurp a family farm struggling to make ends meet. And to the Michigan Farm Bureau, your claims about caring about the family farm are an abject joke. But then again, tell me something I don't know. And to all of you Republicans or those on the right wing who claim that you care about families keeping their land and keeping their farms, well, you have an awful, awful way of showing it. I'll give you a link to Patriots for Montcalm, and like I said during the interview, I'll also give you that link to the Planet Detroit story detailing the corporate and right-wing forces standing in the way of helping farmers and blocking Michigan moving into the clean energy age, an age which will help create jobs and a cleaner environmental future. You'll find those links along with this week's episode located on leftoflansing.com. And again, progressive policies like this one are helping people and helping communities, which is why right-wing forces backed by the Michigan Farm Bureau, are fighting to squash it. Don't sign the Citizens for Local Choice to Hurt Farmers ballot petition if you happen to come across it, okay? Stay away from it. And if it somehow does garner enough signatures, vote it down this November. Time for a Left of Lansing last call. Look, I noticed many liberal and progressive voices I follow on social media this week were upset with the first episode of Jon Stewart's return to The Daily Show. Oh, I loved The Daily Show when Jon Stewart used to host back in the day during those Bush years and even the Obama years. He was a much, much needed voice. And now Stewart's back after being gone from The Daily Show desk for the past 9 years. And there was a lot of excitement over his return, as he will now sit at his desk once again each Monday night during this election year. But before I got to watch, okay, before I got to watch that first episode, because I was in bed early on Monday, I woke up Tuesday and I was getting inundated with many people I follow on social media who were giving critical reviews of Jon Stewart's performance. I mean, many were up in arms that Stewart presented both President Biden and Donald Trump as old men, which, well, come on now, they are. But they were really, really, really upset that Stewart focused on Joe Biden's tendencies to misspeak and tendencies to mix up names and stuff like that. Now, I finally did get the chance to watch the episode. And like I suspected, I laughed. I laughed a lot. I guess I'm wondering how many people criticizing Stewart forgot what him being on The Daily Show was all about. He always went after those in power and made fun of just about everyone. But he always seemed, in my opinion, he always seemed to hold a bit more criticism and ire for the right wing. Now, of course he did, because that's why progressives and liberals watched him. And he calls them as he sees them. And even though I found him to be entertaining and funny, I didn't always agree with his takes either. I don't really know many people that I agree with 100% of the time. I'm hoping you don't agree with me 100% of the time. Yet I listened to him because he rightly mocked those who mocked the rest of America by refusing to help the rest of America. Yes, Stewart did call out Biden and his team and his supporters for many of Biden's mistakes. Hey, I've talked about Biden's mistakes, or what I view to be his mistakes, on this podcast many, many times. And I got the impression that Stewart was arguing that if democracy is on the line, Biden's got to be better in front of the cameras as much as his supporters claim he is off camera. Now, you can argue, hey, this is what happens. The media is just always on Biden whenever he speaks and whenever he makes a mistake. And you know what? There's probably some truth to that, no doubt. However, don't forget how many of us on our side always jumped down George W. Bush's throat whenever he made his vocal errors. And there were many. I don't know why it hurts so many people that I follow what Jon Stewart said. I don't know, because I found that to be spot on commentary when it came to Biden. In fact, it's kind of low hanging fruit. And of course, he also attacked Trump for having his many stupid statements and forgetful moments. And I do believe that Donald Trump is suffering from cognitive decline. It's happening right in front of our eyes. We're seeing it happen every single day. And Stewart even talked at length about Trump's willingness to destroy NATO, thereby handing Ukraine and other parts of Europe to Russia and Vladimir Putin. Stewart also highlighted, along with his guest from The Economist, how the right wing is always talking about this new world order that's taking over, but yet they are the ones literally trying to set a new world order filled with right-wing authoritarians, like in Poland and in Russia. Stewart then also was able to encapsulate by saying how this new world order that the right wing is trying to set up is all centered on this anti-woke agenda, an agenda that's driving the right wing in this country. He talked about that. I didn't see many people on Twitter or on Facebook lauding Stewart for doing such a thing, because I'm not seeing that kind of talk on cable news, not a whole lot of it, at least. Again, I found Stewart to be sounding the alarm bells of what happens if Trump retakes the White House. Now, the part I disagreed with Jon Stewart is when he said, and I quote, If your guy loses, bad things might happen, but the country is not over. Now there's where John Stewart sounds like he never, ever left the 1990s, because there are many women, people of color, many in the LGBTQ plus community, working families, and those of us who believe in democracy who downright fear Trump getting back into the White House. And if he gets into the White House, we're not sure the country will be the same again. I mean, we barely survived the first one. And that's what I would tell John Stewart. Oh, and Trump said that he won't do anything when it comes to gun violence, as we surpass the 6th anniversary of Parkland and the 1st anniversary of the MSU shooting. Luckily, we have some strong progressives here in Michigan who decided not to wait around for nothing to happen in Washington, and they passed several gun safety laws that just went into effect here this week in the state of Michigan. Again, DC Democrats, watch what's happening here in Michigan. You'll learn a thing or two. So, I don't always agree with John Stewart, but everyone, get a grip. If we can't laugh at our side, or if we can't criticize those because they're critical of Team Blue, then we're just the same as the right wing. I've always said that the difference with progressives is that we can be critical of our side when our side is doing wrong. That's what makes us different than the right wing. And I have to tell you, everyone, I never, ever want to be like the right wing.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Let me say a quick thank you to my good friend Rich for all of his hard work with leftoflansing.com. Don't forget to subscribe to leftoflansing.com. And don't forget to subscribe to The Left of Lansing podcast wherever you get your podcast. And please give it a 4 or 5 star review if you can. Before I go, let's talk about last week's Twitter poll, and then I will introduce this week's poll. Now, last week, the question was, how important is a candidate's stance on gun safety laws when you vote? A whopping 78% of you said very important, which makes sense to me. 13% of you said somewhat important, and the rest of you said it doesn't make much of an issue one way or another for you. Okay, that's fine. So gun safety laws are important for the large majority of voters. And I have to say that will be a pretty major issue going into this November. Now, this week's poll, again, that's at Left of Lansing on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. The question this week is, do you believe local governments should have the right to block family farmers from partaking in clean energy projects such as wind and solar farms? Your answers are yes, no, I'm not sure. Vote on at Left of Lansing on Twitter. Yes, I know, it's sad. Football season is over, but the Detroit Tigers pitchers and catchers reported in Lakeland, Florida this week, and the full team reports in just a few days. That means baseball season is nearly upon us, and it also means we're just a month away until I get my first sips of Oberon beer. Oh, I cannot wait. Until next week, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.